Hey guys, welcome to the new podcast, Days in the Wild. Well, it's the same podcast, just a new name, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. This is going to be our first episode with a new name. So we're going to talk a little bit about Onyx Maps and how to use it in the field and different ways that I use it. And I have Max Sandow with us on, and we're going to kind of pick his brain a little bit on how he uses it as a tool to improve his success and go from there. What's going on, Zach?
How's it going, John? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Pleasure to have you on, and excited to hear your take on everything. Were you just recently in Arizona? Did you have an Arizona hunt?
I did. It was actually last year, so I went.
Oh, it was last year.
Yeah, last season. I wasn't able to make it down, which was unfortunate. We had just a couple events that kind of got in the way. But yeah, I went down to Arizona for the first time. We actually did a video piece on it. Steve Drake made one called Anyone's Hunt. And it was just like the concept was like we had never – none of us had ever been there. We'd never hunted it. We've all hunted mule deer with a bow, but we'd actually never been down to Arizona. And so Drake had gone down once and then – kind of checked it out and saw stuff, but then we were like, all right, let's go to a brand new spot, never been to, and document, you know, kind of the whole process. And so we didn't end up shooting one, but we did get on a couple really nice bucks. But you know how it is. It's just, I think we're at full draw. I think there's three or four of us that were at full draw throughout the week. Just couldn't quite get it done, but saw a ton of deer, lots of great country. And that's one that I told myself after that hunt I was going to do it every single year from then on out, and then I missed the next year. But it's definitely a goal to make that a priority from now on.
Gotcha. Yeah, I saw a couple of those YouTube clips, and yeah, you guys got one good, really good mule deer. I remember towards the end there, that was a good, really good one. You guys got in there pretty close.
Yeah. Yep. We went that kind of end of December, and early in the trip, just like any new hunt, we covered a lot of ground just trying to kind of learn the area and find where, you know, the majority of the deer were. We knew it was a little early for the rut, but you know, they might start getting a little curious. And so it was really finding does, but we didn't find any real mature bucks. But then the last couple of days we just happened to find the right areas, and we found kind of two good spots that had one, first we knew there was good deer numbers in general, but then we saw a bunch of does, and then we kind of went back and we hadn't seen bucks for a couple of days, and those guys went in there and they found that big one that actually, you know, there was a hot doe in there, and there ended up being three bucks, two pretty nice ones and one very nice one in there. And so it was cool because it was an area like that drainage we had actually hunted maybe three times that week, and it was kind of slow, but we saw good numbers of deer, a couple of does kind of going in and out. And then, yeah, they went back that last day and a half and ended up finding that good buck in there.
That's how it is. You know what? Honestly, if you can find an area that has a good amount of does in it, you just got to keep coming back and checking it, because it could change from one day to the next. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like 4 days, 5 days without seeing a buck, and all of a sudden, boom, there's going to be four bucks in there.
Yeah.
It's
crazy. Once those deer start rutting, I mean, they're moving so much that, yeah, I think, you know, our strategy's always been get up high, find the does, and just be patient, because, you know, it can be an hour and you'll have another buck that might have been miles away before that that's just cruising through looking for a hot doe.
Right, exactly. I almost like that the December hunt better than January, to be honest with you. I kind of like my favorite is that week right after Christmas, or the 5 days, 6 days after Christmas.
And yeah.
It's always been a good time for me. I mean, every once in a while you have a little off year where it doesn't kick off until, you know, that first week of January, whatever. But for the most part, December's always been a really good time for me. I just tend to find really big bucks in that week. They seem to be a little bit easier to put a stalk on, a little bit easier to manipulate, to get them to do what you want them to do.
Yeah.
Not quite as, you know, frantically chasing around. And here's the other thing, is they haven't been hunted yet, you know, hunted yet for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And it makes it nice, you know, because it's like, well, for one, for us, I was really looking forward to it because when we went down there, I mean, we had like a foot and a half of snow and just very, very cold temperatures. So it's like, yeah, let's go down to Arizona, you know, and it's not, we were up on the northern portion. So it still got pretty cold, but like hunting wise, it was, you know, we're in the 40s and 50s during the day, which is like the perfect temp. You know, it's cooler in the mornings, midday, it's maybe getting, you know, yeah, in those 40s to 50s. So it's like, very comfortable. You know, I would honestly prefer maybe even a touch colder, but the weather was fantastic. And like, we, you know, we definitely saw a lot of traffic from hunters early, especially when it first opened on like the Saturday and Sunday. But then just like anywhere else on public land, as soon as it got midweek, really, we were like out there by ourselves. And there was just so much public land that it was like, it could almost get overwhelming because it's like, man, we have like 10 places we wanted to go check that we had scouted earlier. We'd been sharing waypoints back and forth, kind of just checking out these different drainages, or we got a tip from someone. And we just had a whole bunch of waypoints that we just marked like a different color. And those were areas that we wanted to check out, hadn't been there, knew nothing about it. And then as we'd go, we'd start leaving notes on there and kind of be like, okay, this is one to come back to. This wasn't quite what we thought, so we're going to go ahead and delete that one off. And it was nice, you know, especially like midweek, just being able to – we covered a lot of ground in the cars, just, you know, going to get into places, and then we'd hike in, go find a vantage and glass for a while, and then we'd come out, cruise, go to another spot. And then once we started finding deer, we kind of, you know, a couple days in, kind of started figuring out, like, we're going to focus on, like, these 2 to 3 areas. Because we think, you know, there's enough deer numbers, there's enough bedding area, and it looks, you know, like a good area that deer are going to be up and moving. It has cover that they can kind of, you know, we actually have a chance, and it's a little advantageous for a stalk. And so that was kind of our strategy there. But if I were to do it again, you know, we went on the opener, which I believe was like mid-December at that point. I don't remember the date exactly, but yeah. If we were to go again, I would definitely back it up, and I think right after Christmas would be a good time period.
Good strategy. Well, you know, I didn't give you an opportunity to really talk about who you are, what you do, and how you fit into the puzzle here. So before we go on any further, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself?
Yeah. So I actually grew up in Missoula, Montana, where our headquarters of OnX is located. Grew up hunting and fishing, played sports. Ended up going out to North Dakota to go to college and played football for a while. And then I wanted to come back to Montana because it's just a fantastic state. Lots of opportunity for hunting and fishing. And ended up starting at OnX as an intern the day after I graduated college. And that was a little over 4 years ago. And so did a variety of different things in the digital marketing space and community. And then now I've kind of worked my way up. So now I'm the hunt marketing manager. I just work with the team, all our different channels, and kind of help with the communications, help facilitate and help where they need me. But then I also manage our partnerships that we have with our NGOs and our ambassadors and stuff like that. And so I feel very, you know, blessed because it's one of those things, like growing up, I wanted to do something in the hunting industry because it was just, you know, hunting's my passion. And what's not better than being able to talk hunting every single day and do it for work. So feel super lucky there, but yeah, I've been here for a little over 4 years now.
That's awesome. It's awesome. So a lot of the questions I get people ask me questions on our Ask the Pros section. And one of the questions I get all the time is, oh, you know, is it worth me buying on X? And instead of us talking about the features and blah, 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 I kind of want to talk about how you use it, and, you know, I'll interject where I feel necessary about this, how I use it as a hunter, as a guide. So what are some of the ways that you use OnX that improve your hunting experience?
Yeah, no, you know, and this is one of those things, yes, I work here, but I actually used the product before I worked here. And really, the reason for it was kind of our bread and butter, and that's public and private land ownership. And the reason why it was so crucial is a lot of stuff that I do up in Montana when I first started was hunting, you know, checkerboards. And so this is sections where it's public, private, and the boundaries are very difficult to tell where you're at. And so I know everyone's heard this, but really the biggest thing, like maybe the main reason why I use it, is because it opens up new areas. I'll be driving down the road for a family trip and I'll just look over and see some good looking habitat, never been there. And I'll just pull the map up and kind of see and realize that it's like, hey, there's some good public there. There's a Montana block management access, whatever it is. And it just makes it nice because I can go check out these new areas and essentially get, you know, 10 years of experience or maybe 5 to 6 trips it would take scouting to know it. I can have that in like 10 minutes. And so the big one that I've been doing, the way I hunt elk, turkeys, deer, a big, you know, one of my big strategies is hunting the border of public and private, knowing that these animals want to be down on the private. Most of the time it's farmland, whatever. And being able to find these ways that I can navigate through and get up around and find where they're going to go up to bed on public ground. Generally, that's up in the hills for a Montana standpoint. And finding these ways, you know, sometimes it might only be a section. I mean, last year I shot my bull during archery season on a single section. It was just, you know, 640 acres. And it was just sitting right there, private below it. But I knew these elk kept wanting to move, you know, up onto that state piece. And so just kind of worked our way in and waited. And he ended up coming up to go bed. And we got up in front of him and was able to get a shot.
Yeah, I do a lot of that, actually. And it's something I figured it out early in life, but early in my hunting career. But I really started doing it a lot. It's actually when you guys first came out with the chips for the GPS and all that. I would use it to find, like you said, those section of public that were either nestled between private or and it really came useful when I was in Wyoming because it's like a giant checkerboard in the region that I hunt, and it was only 22% public land, and you know, so it's a lot of private to navigate around. But the private land, it always seemed like the private lands where all the deer were at or the antelope were at, and using that to figure out those little ways and those little access points to get in that people were just like, you know, they just keep driving by and say, oh, okay, because this is, you know, all this private right here. I killed 3 years in a row in this, so I guess it would be three or four sections that was public, and there was a little easement basically, but it took you like a mile walk basically that you had to do, but it was like 200 yards. But I wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't for OnX. And 3 years in a row, I killed antelope in the same spot. And
yeah,
it was just like, you know, this is heaven sent when you have that information and you can use it to your
yeah. No, absolutely. And I mean, that's the one we get so many people emailing or writing in or calling us about antelope hunting specifically, because it's like, you know, a lot of time with antelope hunting, it's pretty flat. You can go out and walk, but, you know, a lot of people like to just cruise and they like to cover country and find where these goats are. And how nice is it when you look down, you know, you see them out there and you look down and you're like, oh, wait a minute, that's state land. Like I can go hunt that on public, or if it's private. We have plenty of people that are like, okay, that's private land. I know the name of who it is. There's their house, and I can go knock and ask for permission. And I think that's one of those things, like, you know, I'm definitely guilty of it. I get nervous and I don't love doing it. And I've kind of tried to make myself branch out and do it more. But I think it's one of those things people think everyone's going to say no. But I hear, especially with antelope hunting, you know, being able to go up there and actually know their name and, you know, being respectful. I mean, the worst thing they can say is no, but I've heard so many stories of people that just have really good hunts because they're willing to, you know, look down, find their name, go to their house and actually knock on the door and ask for permission.
Yeah, no, for sure. I've used it a few times for that. I'm like you, I really hate doing it. It makes me really nervous.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I'm going to get shot coming down somebody's driveway, but
yeah, absolutely.
No, but I really, I've been successful in acquiring, you know, places to hunt because of that. So what are some of the things that you're using the app for to prepare for your hunts? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely. So now, you know, we got we actually got spring turkey starting up here and spring bear coming up in a couple weeks. And so, you know, I have my spots that we've hunted forever, and those will stay on there, and they're pretty easy. I could go in there without waypoints and I'd know, you know, what I'm doing. But now what I'm, you know, what's nice is just being able, I'm looking through and I'm actually looking for, you know, and this is talking like turkey hunting, but I'm looking for these small sections, kind of like we were talking about. And I'm looking for areas of private that I think these birds are going to be on and where they're going to move up. And I'm putting them, generally what I do is I will throw on the turkey waypoint, but I'll change a different color. And so yellow is my color of areas that I haven't been to, but they're areas of interest for me. And so I need to go validate them or disprove them, whatever. But right now, you know, I was actually laying in bed last night and I'm sitting there marking these different areas and trying to figure out the ones I'm going to go. And then the other thing I'm doing is, you know, it's permit season's coming up. And so I have a couple areas in states that I just put in for every year. And I know what I'm doing. But as I start building up more points, I have opportunities and potential of drawing better units. And so the first thing I'm doing is, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, might take away from some of my work time, but I'm pulling up, you know, on the computer just so I get the bigger screen. And then I can have the regulations and permits and everything there on one screen. And then on the other screen, I'm sitting there checking them out. And I'm looking for these areas that, you know, does it have what I'm looking for terrain and habitat? Does it have enough public access that I think I can do it? And honestly, for me, I don't want, you know, I don't want too much. You know, it's great, but I feel like if there's just like a ton of public land for me personally, I generally am like, man, where do I start? And I really have to start diving in and looking for stuff like burns or looking for these different areas that I think I can get away from people. But kind of lately what I've been doing is like, what are some, you know, which one has a good mix? It has some public, but it's not the easiest to reach. So maybe I have to hike in a little ways to get into the bigger section, or maybe it's just a bunch of little sections of stuff that I'm trying to find. So, you know, you always hear like the best way to have a good hunt is get away from the hunters. And I agree with that completely. And if you're looking at like a national forest standpoint, that's just, you know, sweat equity. You have to get in and just hike in further and get away from them. And I enjoy doing that. I did that in Colorado last year for archery and it was great. But I really enjoy finding the places that people look past. And so right now, like with my scouting, looking for permits and stuff, I'm really just scouring the map on the computer and I'm looking for, does it have enough? You know, like, can I get 3 to 4 sections that touch together that might get looked past, or maybe you can only access from one point. So if I head back to the opposite end, I should have a pretty good hunt that I think people are going to look past it. And I should have it maybe not to myself, but, you know, almost to myself. And so that's kind of what I'm doing now, is just scouring a couple states that I plan on putting in for, finding these different areas and throwing a whole bunch of yellow waypoints for areas of interest that I want to check out if I draw them. And then hopefully as I start to figure out what we draw, I'll be able to get out and do some scouting in the field and go kind of validate these different areas.
Oh, that's huge. That's huge. So you mentioned using yellow waypoints for areas of interest. So I'm assuming you have a different color for different things. What are some of the things? How are you organizing? Because I, you know, what drives me insane is that I didn't really, I don't know if I, maybe I didn't notice the colors, or maybe they happened well after I had the majority of my waypoints, but I have a enormous amount of red waypoints everywhere. And right now I'm starting to, now as I put in new waypoints, I use different colors for different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So organize it.
Yeah, for me, you know, so for me, I'm doing, you know, I'm switching them around. So I'm using the different icon types for the stuff. So I have like, you know, turkeys for turkeys and elk and the antelope and trail cams and everything like that. But then I'm also doing what I will do if generally, you know, sometimes I get kind of lazy. And if it's like an area that, like Colorado, for example, I've only hunted elk. I just ended up using the red waypoints there. But generally my elk ones are the white ones. And so what I try to do is I try to split up the colors by species, because there are some areas where I'm hunting multiple species. And so it's kind of nice if I have different waypoints. I know I have the icons, but if you're zoomed out at like a macro level, you just see a whole bunch of red. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, it's nice because, you know, they're not always in the same terrain. And so like for the breaks, like over in Montana, for example, I can be hunting antelope, mule deer, and elk all in, you know, sitting in one spot, but there's a chance I could see them there, but generally I'm hunting different areas. And so I'll switch the colors up. I'll have the icons on there and it'll just help me kind of organize those. And then the other thing that makes it nice too is like being able, when I go through and I name them, I generally add the hunting district in it. So then when I go to my content and I want to filter through it, it just helps me kind of see what they are instead of just using the date. Oh. So generally what I'll do is I will start with the hunting district and then I'll have some sort of, you know, descriptive part. So whether it's like a creek that it's in or a road that I'm using to access or, you know, a major basin, something like that, that just helps me so I can kind of keep them all together. And we actually have some things, you know, we're always working. And this is one of the things that you get a lot of folks when you start putting hundreds and hundreds of waypoints, it gets tough to manage it. And so we're definitely working on ways to make it easier to manage. You know, that's something that we love feedback and we understand if people get frustrated with it. And so we welcome that. And now we're kind of working on ways that you can filter your stuff and kind of house it and just make it much easier to find. So we'll definitely have some stuff coming out this year and we'll continually, you know, every year we're going to be taking feedback from folks. And it's just a learning process, you know, now that we've been around for, well, we've been around for 10 years as a company, the app's been out since about 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. The more and more content you get in there, the harder it is to organize it. And so we just kind of, you'll just learn another hurdle that we got to fix. And so generally what we're doing is we're working with our partners and our ambassadors, but then our customers that email in and talk to us, we actually have a whole bunch of customer service guys that they're helping them out with any of their questions, but then they're also taking notes down and they're passing that on to the engineer team. And we're trying to find ways to simplify it and make it easier from their feedback. And so right now, the best way I've found is using the icon types, being detailed when I actually name the waypoint, and then switching the colors for species or areas of interest or something like that.
That's huge. Yeah. I you know, it's one of those things. I got probably 3,000 waypoints or more on there. I don't even know. All I know is that they don't all show up on the computer because you guys have that one thing where it only shows 1,500 waypoints at a time or whatever. But I really wish I would have took the time to name them all or put an icon to them all. Because now it's like every time I go back, I'm like, oh, wait, what did I put this in here for? What was this for?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, and a lot of my waypoints I transferred over from my GPS.
Yeah.
So those all have names, which is good. But you know, it's tough to I've really, like, little by little, every time I go into a new section now, I start going in and editing a few that are in where I'm going and trying to get it all organized, because it definitely could be more efficient from my end if I was. But anyway, so let's talk about scouting. I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit of what you're doing. Are you even going as far as, like, you know, mark and sign and stuff like that? Or is that just too much and cluttering up your?
No, I definitely am. So I'm, you know, for one, I got areas that during the season. And so I'm, you know, I get into, like, when I'm out hunting and I'm seeing these sign, but then also, like, even now I'm looking for, I enjoy shed hunting. I'm not stellar at it, but I enjoy getting out. And so marking where, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to see, especially areas you've hunt year in, year out. I can see where they're at in the summer and kind of mark that area. And then I know, you know, where the cows are during archery season. So I know where to expect where the bulls are going to be. And then I know, you know, I'm looking for these sanctuary areas that I know during rifle season, and then their wintering grounds. And it's kind of cool because when you mark those out, and you look at that specific area, you can kind of start to see where these elk like to travel during the different time periods. And then when I'm in the field and I see certain things like a rub or something like that, I'll mark it because it kind of just helps validate during that time period, here's where I think they're going to be. And it really helps when I'm looking, you know, now, and I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, there's this one spot that's like a kind of a wilderness area, and I've hunted one portion of it and I've found kind of where I think they're at. There's some private way down below and whatnot, but being able to see it on the map and see where I've seen sign throughout the years and I've seen animals throughout the years during these time periods, and be able to get, like, the holistic picture. And it kind of helps me with, like, okay, I don't really know where the sanctuaries are that I think they're going to once they split off from those cows during rifle season, but I've never been to this area and it looks like it's, you know, super dark. It looks like it's steep. It's got good bedding cover, a little bit of food. Looks like they'll be left alone. And I actually have, like, this is an actual use case right now that I have circled for an area that I, you know, want to check out. And so this summer I'll go scout it, you know, see if it actually has some bedding. And this one's actually kind of nice because, you know, it's like the stereotypical, like what you want to find kind of in that November elk hunting is I got good bedding and it's not far from a burn. So I know I have some pretty good food there. And it's also a little bit of a hike in there. So I think it's going to be away from where, you know, the majority of hunters are going to want to go because it's kind of steep and you got to go down and get super rocky. And then you got to go straight back up to get to this side. And so this is one that I'm going to go check out, make sure it actually has some good bedding cover, see what the food situation's like. And I just have it now. I have a waypoint kind of in the middle of that area that I think, but then I'll actually zoom in, look at the aerial imagery and the topography and see if I can find some benches on there where I think they'll be bedded up. And I'll take just like the shape tool and I'll just kind of circle them for areas of interest. Like these are kind of areas that I think they could be at. Okay. But really what it's going to take for me is I got to go get in there and kind of see what it looks like so I can get the visual of it as well. But right away when I'm looking and it, you know, it changes for each species, but if we're talking like deer or elk, I'm looking for, you know, where are they bedding? Is there good food? And I'm, you know, marking all these. And so I'll have my area, I'll have my waypoints on the different spots that I think they are. And then I'll kind of use the shape tool and do like a circle around, you know, a specific part of a burn where I think the food's going to be a little better, or here's where I think the bedding's going to be from there because there's a good saddle that leads down and then there's a bench a little bit lower, and I'll kind of mark those out. And then, yeah, I'll just try to go validate them on there. The other thing is come summertime, I run trail cameras. And so having those trail cameras marked, but then being able to attach those photos to my waypoint, just so I can kind of see it. And I don't worry about attaching all of them, but what I want to do is for these areas that I have year in, year out, being able to see movements and photos year after year. So I get kind of a year after year comparison.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to seeing like, is the, and this is, you know, I don't know. I need to see what, you know, the answer is here, but are these animals coming in around a certain time period, like certain time of day, within a couple day period before they go to start chasing cows and leave their summer range? And that's what I'm trying to figure out. And so with my cameras, I'm trying to be meticulous there and see if I can kind of pattern these animals. And obviously things change, but I have a couple set up on different saddles that I know they cruise through, and there's a couple wallows that are there year in, year out. And so I'm looking forward to getting a couple years worth of information. Right now I've had them out. This will be my second year. And so I'm hoping that some of the photos that I got from last year, I'll be able to, you know, get something fairly similar from, you know, not the same animals, but animals that are in the area, and then kind of compare and contrast and see like, okay, they're hitting it during this time period. It seems like they're coming in after dark throughout these couple of days. And then I know that, you know, they generally break off and the cows are down over in this area, and kind of just try to learn more about the animals in the districts I'm hunting.
Nice. So what are some of the ways that you use Onyx that we haven't talked about? I know you say you're marking this and you're doing that, and like while you're on the hunt, what, like some of the obvious stuff that's not obvious, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One of the big ones that we did, we actually did this in the Arizona hunt. Stephen Drake's actually the one that showed me this, but, and you know, it's very simple. I don't know why I didn't think about it, but we had a couple bucks that we had spotted down there. And so we were kind of sitting on top of this plateau and we're glassing this big flat. And so, you know, I think they're junipers down there, but they're like, they don't look that tall and you can see that animal pretty easy when you're up high. But as soon as you get down on its level, yeah, every single tree looks the same. And it's the same thing in sagebrush country, you know, in Wyoming or whatever. But these were just like 6 to 8 feet. And so it's like you didn't really have contour to guide you into it. And so what we ended up doing is we actually looked at the aerial imagery, was able to find an opening that was about 50 yards to its left that we could identify on the map. And then we actually dropped a waypoint where he was. And we took a picture with our phone of the area, and it kind of gave us, there was like a little swale on one side of him, and then we had that opening on the other. And so the picture was just help, you know, when Steve got down on the ground, actually, when he was stalking in, he could look at it. And because, you know, everything looks different, but if he actually found one tree that was dead and it happened to be, you know, I can't remember, X amount of yards away from this deer, and he located that tree and he knew that tree was beyond that deer. And so he kind of used that as he got down there. But then when he was looking at the app, he was able to actually draw out how he thought he should stalk in there. You know, once he got the wind in his favor, he realized that, okay, I need to get over to his right. The wind's coming, so now we're good. It's coming from him to me. And then he would use the map and that waypoint to actually draw out how he was going to stalk on it. And as he got close, like when he got, you know, in the red zone within 100 yards or so, he looked at that picture, saw that dead tree, and knew that he was within, you know, 100 yards, and he really had to slow down and be meticulous and start, you know, take a step, look, glass everything, make sure the wind's in his favor. And so that's one that we've used quite a bit, especially like spring bear hunting when you're hunting these big openings and stuff. Because as soon as you dive off and you start to actually head on the stalk, everything looks different. And so when we see an animal, you know, when we're out, well, yeah, spring bear hunting or mule deer, pretty much any spot in stalk, we'll actually pull the app out, look at it, mark where it is, you know, and I'm usually hunting with a group of people, my dad, my brother, or folks at OnX, and we strategize and make sure we feel good about it. And then we use the app to help us just kind of navigate in and get close. It'll never get us right to the animal, but it'll at least help us get into that, you know, 100 range mark or 100 yard range mark. And so that's been a big one we've used quite a bit. We've also used it rifle hunting when like it's across a drainage and someone shoots a bear or shoots an elk or something like that. We'll mark the waypoint, and then when we get down, it helps us actually get into the animal. Because there's times, you know, where it's like it might be dark, or you get down there and it looks way different. That at least gets you close, so you know you're within, you know, hopefully 50 yards of finding some blood or the animal.
So I do that as well, and I'll even add to that. You know, so when we're desert mule deer hunting, a lot of times we're, you know, hunting these big flats, and you're up way up high and you're glassing, and like you said, you drop down, everything's the same. Everything's the same.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, there's not a whole lot of distinction. You know, it depends on what kind of desert you're in. You know, if there's a lot of saguaro cactuses. I love hunting where there's saguaros because all the saguaros are unique from each other. I, like you, I take photos of those saguaros, you know, through my saguaros.
Yeah.
And I do that. But one of the things I've done is I take my range finder and I will range find the distance between me and the animal. Then I'll take out the app and I will, you know, use the app where it's pointing, you know, using the directional tool on the app, at it. And then I will go to my map tools and I will draw a line that whatever 750 yards, whatever it is, from me directly out on the same vector as that I'm. And that usually puts me right into, that's where I drop my waypoint.
Yeah.
Where I need to get to. You know, when there's topography, obviously, you know, I switch to topo mode and I put it in hybrid and I'll look for that topography. Okay, here, there's that little rock outcropping or whatever. You know, the imagery is not as good, you know, or not as good as you need it to pick out certain trees and,
yeah,
and so on and so forth. So you really got to rely on stuff that you can make out. And like you said, openings, stuff like that. This year, we were 5 miles away from about 40 head of elk and for my nephew's late rifle hunt. And I was able, from glassing 5 miles away, was able to pick out some, you know, the way the trees, the way the opening was, the way the topography was from that far away, find it on the map and get my cousin and my nephew into like within 300 yards of those deer from 5 miles away, or those elk.
Yeah.
Miles
that's
away.
Awesome. Yeah. And that's
more and more, the better I get at using that. Like I mean, I've done it for years. I used to use my maps on my phone before I had the Onyx to do stuff like that. And then before that, I would do it on my GPS. But now it's just with the tools that are on there, like being able to measure and, you know, just having way better technology now with the imagery and all that stuff. It's literally been the number one deciding factor on many stalks for me. And as a guide too, you know, I'll do that. I'll drop a waypoint on one of my clients' phones or whatever and say, okay, this is, you know, so you'll have this, but and I talk them in with the radio as well.
Yeah.
And it's like game changer there too. It's like, you know, it's that much more information that they have to know exactly what to do, where they are. Or what that has also done for me as a guide was I used to have to keep eyes on my hunter and the deer. Let's say, you know, we're stalking deer in archery season.
Yep.
And I'd have to keep going back and forth, you know, finding him, refinding him. I used to make guys wear orange hats.
Yeah.
Because of that. And now that I started doing this, they can use their GPS or their Onyx rather, use the GPS on their phone to get them to the vicinity, and then I pick them up, you know, and I don't have to keep going back and forth and potentially lose the deer.
Yeah.
And it's been a game changer for us. And I mean, it's a tool that all my guides use. And for me, it's invaluable. You know, I actually start getting my subscription shut off like 2 weeks before the end of the season this year. And I started freaking out because I was leaving the next morning. And I got a hold of everybody trying to get me back on. But it was pretty crazy because I'm so – now I've kind of become dependent on it a little bit, which is kind of shitty. But it's one of those things that I would not like to leave home without it.
Yeah, it you know, it's one of those things that it's like there's areas I can hunt without it, but it's areas that I've hunted forever and I know like the back of my hand. But I really enjoy checking these new areas out, and even areas that I've only been to a couple times – I'm always just double checking, like, do I know where I'm at? You know, and it's not even, do I know where I'm at in according to public or private? It's just like, okay, I think I'm in this drainage. I think there's a flat coming up here or there's a saddle or something like that. And I'm always just pulling it out and double checking. But the one thing I did want to circle back is the range finder that we actually had a guy at the office who did that. And that was the first time I had ever heard of that, but that is an awesome idea. And so he talked about it the same way. He was antelope hunting and he ranged it and then he used the line tool and dropped the waypoint on it and was able to stalk in on it. And he did ended up getting a shot and harvested a nice antelope. And that, I mean, that's an incredible way of using it. I've never, you know, I never had thought about using it, but I'm definitely looking forward to trying it out.
So if you got time, if you could share with us one of your a story that maybe where you used it. I mean, you already shared with us your Arizona hunt, but where you used the Onyx and it was the deciding factor for you that, you know, made the hunt. Or honestly, it doesn't have to be about that, but since we're talking about the subject, or if you have just a really cool hunting story you want to share with us, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. The one I always go to when people ask about this was actually the reason Onyx kind of opened my eyes, and this was way back when we were on the chip, but it goes back to kind of the public private. But I had an elk tag in a good, you know, it was a tough to draw unit. And so I was actually a freshman in college. So I was playing football at the time, and I only had a couple days to come back and hunt. And this was an area that we had hunted deer in forever. My parents actually grew up around there, and my dad, my uncles, and my cousins would hunt it all the time. But this area, you know, we only got a bull elk tag, well, either sex tag. I think I was the third one of all of us to get them, and it was many years in between. And so I finally had the golden ticket, and these guys are all jacked to get out and go hunt. And so we actually had been hunting this same drainage forever. And how it was, there was a fence across, and that's what we thought was private. And then we had, you know, what we could hunt on the public side. And so this was the first year that we had the chip. My uncle actually bought it. And so we only had one chip, and he ended up buying it because He's from Miles City, and our founder, Eric Siegfried, is actually from Miles City, Montana as well. And so he was like, oh, this is pretty cool. It's a local guy. I want to give this thing a try. And this was super early. And so we're hunting, and we end up seeing some bulls across the fence. And I had I had one more day to hunt. This was like right before Thanksgiving weekend, and then I had to go back. And we see these bulls, and it's, you know, kind of later in the day, and we're like, well, this sucks. They're over on private. Like, maybe they'll come across, whatever. And we pull that out, and he actually looks, and there's a state section. There's one section that comes through, and it was on the other side of the fence. And here, we had been hunting this for years. I mean, years. And we had no idea that was a state section there. And just because it was a fence. And so we thought fence, you know, we knew that most of that over there was private, but we thought all of it was private. And they didn't have, you know, there was no sign or anything indicating there. We had walked that fence many times. And here, yeah, those elk ended up being on state, and I ended up shooting, you know, it was a nice five, nothing too crazy, but ended up shooting a nice bull with limited time because we just happened to pull it up and realize that that was public land, and we had been walking past it for years and years and never had an idea that we could actually get on there.
That's awesome.
And so that was, yeah, I mean, that was the one that, like, it was like, all right, there's, you know, because we had so much public land to hunt, we were fine. We never really had to worry about it. This was an area we knew, well, we thought we knew, that we could hunt everything on the left side, but everything on the right was all private. But here there was one section that we could have been hunting. And, you know, I can't say there's another story where it's like, oh, we saw an animal there one time and we didn't get to it. But this time we did see an animal. Fortunately, we had the chip. We were able to look down and see that it was state land, and I was able to shoot a bull before I had to head back to school.
Well, sweet, man. I want to thank you for coming on and shedding some light on the app with us. And unless you have any closing thoughts, I think that's all I got for you today.
No, yeah, I appreciate it. You know, this was a blast chatting. And I mean, I guess my only closing thought is definitely, you know, for everyone out there listening, we do appreciate everyone's feedback. You know, we always get all these great stories of folks telling us how the app has helped them out. And we actually share those throughout the company. And our engineers love hearing them. Everyone that's working on the product, they love hearing that because it validates their work they're putting into it. But then also on top of that, we do appreciate, you know, if something's not right, if the land ownership's wrong, or you'd like, you know, something's not working with a feature, or you think it could be better, we definitely listen to those and they get forwarded to our engineers. And honestly, we feel fortunate because we have, you know, millions of people out there testing it for us and helping us improve the product.
Well, thanks again, and we'll catch up with you soon. Are you guys going to be at the Hunt Expo?
Yep, we'll be down there. We actually have some folks in Portland, and then they're driving down, and we'll be there next week.
Sweet. There.
Yeah, awesome. We'll definitely catch up when we're down there.
Talk to you soon.
Yep.